title of this talk is called The Dark Womb. I'm going to begin with a poem by a woman poet called Denise Levitin. And it's called Eye Mask. So she says, "In this dark I rest, unready for the light which dawns day after day, eager to be shared. Black silk shelter me. I need more of the night before I can open eyes and heart to illumination. I must still grow in the dark. I must still grow in the dark like a root. Not ready at all." So I feel like with all of us being here, one thing that we're doing is getting familiar with this dark. This place where I think we can really grow freedom roots. That for some reason this place has called all of us. And that this place really wants to take us in. And it seems to want us take us in when we're quite naked and kind of stripped back. And it kind of seems that there's no way out of this human dilemma but in. So it's like there's no way out but in. So again, it seems like being here, we're really learning to trust this dark and to trust this opening and to trust this space that kind of opens up amongst the onrush of our kind of history and stories. And that we have this time now to learn to keep kind of staying there and to keep dipping in and to develop some kind of continuity and some relationship with this dark. That we're learning to really release into it, to let ourselves fall into it in a way that I feel we can bring this fresh life. And it seems we have this quite intense fear that can come up of really losing ourselves. And we can start to really grip on and kind of hover above this place that's really wanting us. And I was thinking the other day that it's kind of strange because if we fear that we'll lose ourselves or lose what we've known of ourselves, but it's like our old habits die so hard that they're sure to kind of come back up in an hour. So it's like, it's curious that we don't just kind of go in and go, woo, and just take it. And so I'm curious how we can dip into this place, how staying in this deep can not be so scary. And that if there's some possibility that each of us can kind of find a way to kind of slide in or curve in on the back of joy or the back of a very open kind of release. I had the feeling of like a child that kind of gleefully dives into a rock pool, like a little body that just like slides right in. Because I think essentially, like, as scary sometimes, and it might not be for everyone, but sometimes it is, essentially as scary as this place can be, I think it's actually deeply generous. And I think that this place wants all of us to grow up in the most wildest kind of way. That, like, given time, that this place wants us to feel an aliveness and a fullness that's not dependent on being anybody or being anybody special. It's not dependent on this kind of action that we can get into of trying to find our self-worth through all these different actions. It really wants us to release our true voice, unencumbered, to really whoosh it out. And I think it wants to give us a fearless rest as we are. Like a fearless rest to rest exactly as we are with whatever is happening. That it's accessible to us however we are. And Ajay spoke the other day about this deepening down, and that as we really deepen down, that we find that we're not actually alone. That in this deep place, like our sister is there or our mother is there, that the kind of whole humanity is in this place. And that a whole, like, subterranean network of connections are really alive, really freshly alive. That this place somehow, like, cuts through this myth of separation that we can live by. And that somehow, as we deepen into this place, that we're not just doing it for ourselves here on our mat, that this deepening, like, is for everyone. That it's like one person in this room that has, like, a deep insight or a moment of real fearlessness is kind of giving food to all of us in this room. Like, not to mention friends and families, but, like, our own deepening really has effects. It's really worthwhile. It's like the deeper one of us goes, like, the deeper we all go. And there's a long time ago I read a book by an American writer called Carson McCullers. And it's a story about this young girl called Frankie in Southern America. And she loves watching the sky, and she loves standing in doorways and watching people. And she comes up with this phrase, and it's called the we of me. The we of me. And when she finds herself in these curious interactions with people, where this empathetic feeling starts to happen, and she says, it's the we of me happening. And there's one instance when she's, like, in the bottom of the house where there's a kitchen, and she's with this black woman who's a cook, and she's also with this gangly kid who's a bit sickly, wearing glasses. And sometimes, like, through the day, they'll just find themselves hovering together on a chair, having a little cry together. It just kind of comes out. And all of them, this black woman, this girl, Frankie, and this gangly kid, just kind of rock, and for no good reason, have a bit of a weep. And she kind of loves these moments. And it's for no good reason, but it's probably for many reasons as well, like racial tension, and she'd lost her mother, and the gangly kid felt really dorky all the time. So somehow all their suffering lines came together in these shared tears. And it really struck me, just this coming together. Thinking that's this, like, recognition that we're really all in this human boat together. It's like all of us freak out, All of us falter. All of us cry and smile. And all of us die. I think the Tibetans really keep hitting this fact home, saying that like our lives are like a flash of lightning in an autumn sky. So quick. And I was thinking, like, who knows what kind of subterranean connections are happening in this room? Like, who knows what time you're crying that someone else is crying? And I was thinking, like, imagine all the different kind of mindscapes, landscapes that have passed through all of us in these last weeks. Like this big movement that's kind of been churning through this room. Like, I remember at Bodh Gaya, there was an instance where I think it was Chad and Hannah, and they're both sitting quite close by, and suddenly they both just started rocking, like exactly the same timing. I mean, what is this? I was also thinking, like, in each of our own spaces, all the different people we've all thought of, like people that we've loved, or people that we've disliked, people that we've forgiven, all the other people that have kind of come and visited us here and been touched in some way by what we're doing. I don't think we can imagine how big that is. And there's an Aboriginal man in my country, and he talks about this deepening, and he says how crucial it is that we keep digging into our bones, keep digging into the dirt. And he says that, like, at the essence of all of us, we're black, and that we have this black soil inside us, and in this black soil, in this deep place, we can have a feeling of ourself, and from this feeling of ourself, we can really feel other people. And he speaks from this feeling in himself, he can really start to read the land. And he says he starts to, when he digs down and gets to this feeling, he starts going walking. And he starts walking the country. And suddenly from this feeling, it becomes so alive to him, this land. And I can't remember the exact story, but it's like this turtle comes out. And he sees the turtle and he starts following the turtle. And he gets to the water. And I can't remember what else happening, but it was like something essential was that he needed was kind of happening. Not only that, he says that through following this feeling, he started walking through the land, and then it wasn't like he was walking through the land, but he was walking through himself. So he's walking through this great big we of me, this we that includes the land, our ancestors, ourself. Sometimes something that has helped me is this feeling of this big whale, like to help me deepen down, this big whale, this fluid body deepening into the blue ocean. And it's like as the whale goes down, it can start to make this sound that's so low human ears can't hear it. But I think it's a kind of sound of intimacy because it calls out to all the other whales and they can hear each other on this really low frequency. And once when my boyfriend and I were fighting and we were in bed and kind of really on the edges of the bed and really spontaneously, I started making this whale sound. It just came out. I was like, I can't remember, but it was quite a beautiful sound, I thought. And then he started doing it back to me. And like, you know that place where words just aren't going to cut it? Like, you're just going to get more tangled if you speak. And so from either side of the bed, we were going, every time it came back, I was just flooded with delight. And then this went on for a while. And then I think he said, enough now, Jess. Like, I would have kept going for hours. And then we had another fight and I tried it again, like, it didn't work. So these things have to be kind of spontaneous. So I think I've heard Jaya say this once before, but something in this deepening down, it's like as we close these eyes, as we're here closing these eyes, other eyes can start to have open, like an eye in the heart. And what would it be to have like an eye in the belly? Or like that Aboriginal man, I think, clearly had like eyes in his feet. We do, though, have this fear. Like, I think it's quite a deep human fear of losing ourselves. I think we have a fear for lots of many different things. I think sometimes this fear can really gallop, can like gallop us somewhere. And I think as we deepen, it's part of this deepening that this fear can sometimes start galloping. And that deep unseen pains can rise up. And I think we have these kind of habits that can be like quite deeply wired into our systems. We have kind of generational habits that can be wired into to us, the we of me. And for each family there's different kind of ones. Could be like the male line, the men not being quite able to take their potency, or the woman line not being able to really get her full voice through and compromising herself. I mean, there's many. Deep line of some kind of grief that we're somehow landed with. Sometimes it's like big things can just move through our little body. Things that are bigger than us. And I think it's in this sense that like not everything we experience is our fault. And I think it's in this sense that like a deep patience and a deep care is needed for our experience. And I think it's also in these deeply fresh eyes that can look up at what's happening from these freedom roots, from this depth. Like Albert Einstein said that problems can't be solved by the same awareness that created them, that we need to dive in and bring this freshness up to view our lives from, so they can really be transformed. I think this fearless reference point is crucial to be able to view all the phenomena that moves through us. It's really making this fearless place a kind of home in time with continuity, to keep claiming that freedom and claiming that right for a real happiness and aliveness. And this freedom that can really see through views and senses that we've had of ourselves that are kind of born on the wings of a sad history. Parts that have squashed us, that we can really see through them, has very wide ramifications. I think it's like useful to have some kind of quiet eye, not like a really alert eye, but a quiet eye for these parts in us that can come up and kind of undermine our capacity to sit with the whole terrain of our experience. That part of us that can go, what is this? Like, what is this? What is this deep, stuck cloud? You know? What is this, like, recoiling, this kind of moving away? I think probably many of you will know of the story of the Buddha when he's sitting under the tree and he's making that deep commitment to really enter the deep and open in a fearless way. And Mara comes up, like this force comes up and says, you know, who do you think you are? Kind of sitting under the tree, opening yourself so wildly. And he just says, like, I see you, Mara. Like, I see you. And he touches the earth. Like, I have total right to be sitting here and to opening to this depth. And I think, like, she... or he, like, hurls all this stuff at him and he stays sitting and she kind of combusts. So I spoke about this the other day and I just felt like saying it again, but it's like sometimes in these deep habits, and I think almost part of being human is that we can get this just shock inside us in some kind of way, and at certain times we can get this kind of paralysis around some of these habits that move through us. Certain moods can come up that can almost leave us kind of trance-like. I remember when I was a little girl and I was walking back from the back beach from this ocean, and there was this march fly biting my arm, and it was just like on my arm, and I was looking at it and it was really hurting and I was starting to cry, but I was just walking along, like, not doing anything. Then this woman came up and she just flicked it off. She goes, just flick it off, love. And then it left. And yeah. But in that moment, like, I didn't know that I could just flick it off. And then I knew. Like, sometimes maybe we just need to flick it off. It's like this challenge to this feeling that we don't have the capacity to deal with what we've got. So how can we keep this eye on our right to this freedom ground? And not diminish our capacity to stay with our experience, but, like, empower it. And how can we use our very human hands to aid us in this freedom quest? How can we use our hands and our love? And so if we find a fear is coming up that kind of leaves us, like, we can see that tendency to go into that shock place. Like, how can we then respond to that? Like, bring a spaciousness and a love and a tenderness to that fear that's there, this very real human fear. And use our tools, like, use the breath when we need it, like, to come back to intimacy. Start breathing. Put our faith in that. Just feel our feet on the ground. Sing ourselves back into our heart. Do a mantra that works. Like, how can we listen wholeheartedly, like, watching that tendency to freak out, which is fine, but how possibly can we just wholeheartedly listen to our being with what we can do and then respond and like follow through. The sense that we don't have to be like a miser with ourselves, like that we really can give ourselves what we need in this quest. It's like sometimes we give so much energy to this mistrust in life, but what about this like wild experiment of really trusting our capacity? Like when my little sister came out of the 2-month retreat with Jaya and Gemma, and she began really saying these words, she'd say, like, there's an ancient being in us that knows what to do. Like, there's an ancient being in us that really knows what to do. And can we respect that, respect our capacity, like, bow down to ourselves? I think it's in this that trusting the generosity. Another thing Jaya said to me like 5 years ago or something, like trusting in the generosity of the unknown. That it doesn't want to kind of, you know, do us over to hurt us. Like it actually wants us to release into the bigness of what we are. And I have this one... another poem, and this is by a man, David White, who I think he uses poetry to kind of meet his experience. And it's called Faith. So this man says, bringing him into the room, another man for the mix pot, he says, I want to write about faith. I want to write about the way the moon rises over cold snow, night after night, faithful even as it fades from fullness. Faithful even as it fades from fullness, slowly becoming the last curving and impossible sliver of light before the final darkness. But I have no faith myself. I refuse it, the smallest entry. Let this then, my small poem, like a new moon, slender and barely open, be the first thing that opens me to faith. I found sometimes what really helped me when I was trying to learn to trust the depth of this space, because it would often set me off, is that I began really looking at the inside of vases. A vase is like a ceramic kind of pot shape, but it's quite feminine and sensuous in a way. And friends were giving me these vases and I'd line them up on the table and lie down and just like look at the space inside them, and I would get quite excited. It wasn't something like learning not to get scared of that open space. And just slowly I would just like keep just steadying with myself with this space inside these vases. And of course you know that inside this big space can fit wild fresh flowers. It's like those clay stoves in Bodh Gaya that we had. Sometimes I'd look into them and there'd be like this dark cavern that could look kind of scary. But then as the fire would start coming, you know, this like very exquisite light starting to sort of flicker, and I'd warm my feet on the clay. And so we can use what is in our hands to help us. And then also, there is also a time to be utterly handless. Another term from Jaya. Sometimes when I went for walks, I'd like grab a piece of fruit and eat it, and then like throw the pip away, and then just sit and look at the ocean, just with my hands open. And so this time to be handless and let ourselves deepen. And I remember Christopher Titmus at the end of the first time I sat in Bodh Gaya, he said, like, as you deepen down, you see all these habits of suffering. All these habits of suffering as you deepen down, but if you can stay with it, he said, like, don't forget the luminosity. Don't forget the luminosity. And I think if we can really let ourselves stay with it, that there is like an exquisiteness, like a texture of exquisiteness that really wants to nourish us. And so I wonder if we can be like this one woman, Treya Wilbur, who was Ken Wilbur's wife for some time, and she had cancer, and she was starting to die. And as she was starting to die, this amazing excitement overtook her. She was like, I'm going home, like, I'm dying. Like, really deeply gleeful, and like her partner was just like, oh, like, became like really gleeful too. Of course, like his heart, this wound totally breaking. But there was this like deep trust in the unknown to really take her. Like, I'm going to die. But it's rarely that you hear it with that kind of delight. So I just have one last poem. And this is called Sweet Darkness. And it's another one by David White. When your eyes are tired, the world is tired also. When your vision has gone, no part of the world can find you. Time to go into the dark, where the night has eyes to recognize its own. There you can be sure you are not beyond love. There you can be sure you are not beyond love. The dark will be your womb tonight. The night will give you a horizon further than you can see. You must learn one thing. The world was made to be free in. Give up all the other worlds except the one to which you belong. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn that anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. And may we all find this curve of joy into the deep. And there's some time left, so we can just be silent together.